about is Sin Boldly. But unfortunately, I thought the title up about 2 months ago, and I can't remember why. So
it's up to us to interpret whatever way we want.
Yeah, it is, exactly. I mean, I think we all do anyhow. But I think what I had in mind when I thought of telling the stories of our lives was that we should tell the stories of our lives, our stories, with some conviction and with some interpretation that shows pride and shows the integrity of whatever it is that we've done, and not take what are some other people's interpretation of our lives, which would be maybe thinking poorly of us and therefore making us hang our heads. So I think that's what I was thinking about 2 months ago when they asked me for titles, and I thought of that one. That if you're going to tell your story, you should tell it with some pride and vigor, and because you're a good person, and we know you are, and you just need to explain it in your story. That's why it's your story. That's why you get to tell your story and not someone else. It's really important for us to be able to tell our own stories. I'm going to repeat a few phrases out of yesterday, because a lot of you weren't there, just to remind us about stories, that they are the way we teach one another about our lives, the way we teach one another about lots of things. Stories are ways of doing sociology. They're a way of sharing information. They're myth. They're legend. They are morality tales. Jesus tells stories all the time to teach, and we learn from those stories. We find Jesus' stories infinitely helpful even now. We keep seeing new layers of meaning in them, and I can hear the same story 100 times and hear it differently each time. So stories are really important. A fable or a morality tale, all of those things were meant to teach. But stories are not hard. Stories are probably the easiest way that people teach each other and tell each other what they think is true. The truth of a story lies not in its absolute one-on-one tie to facts. The truth of a story is, well, in our family, we constantly call mythic heightening. You come home from school and you've got a terrible day, and you go, oh, I've had a terrible day, and you exaggerate, and that's mythic heightening. But the truth of it is that what you want to say is to your mother or whoever you're telling the story to, I've had a terrible day, take care of me. And so you exaggerate. And mythic heightening is a good thing. It's the way we express our feelings to each other, and I think it's not a bad thing to do. So that's another way in which this boldly word appealed to me about stories. And I think stories help us understand our experience. They impose some kind of order on it. So when I've told the story of something, I have a women's group, for example, that I've belonged to for 25 years. And when I go to my women's group, what we all do there is tell stories about our lives. We tell what's happened to us in the last 3 weeks since the last time we met. And by telling the story, we come to understand our own lives better. And that's certainly one of the things that writing does for us. I wanted to say something about how to get your side out in the story, to tell your story. You choose the details that you want to choose. You can choose to tell the same story 100 different ways. And in fact, a fun exercise is to tell the same story from many different people's points of view. All the characters in the story, you'd write the same story over and over again from different characters' points of view. But you can choose, out of your experience, you can choose to tell stories that show love or stories that show hate. Or those are the extremes, but like that. Or you can choose to tell stories of frustration or stories of solution, where you came through with a solution. You can talk about hope in your stories of your life or hopelessness. You can tell them with humor or you can tell them with all sorts of other things, the absurdity or a sort of a dourness or in a boring way or with pathos. You can tell stories of strength or of weakness. Lots of survivors of street life tell stories of strength. And it's always so surprising to someone who hasn't listened to many of those stories because they think of the person as being pathetic. And then to hear how much strength and courage it took to survive and ingenuity. I mean, I remember being a poor graduate student and realizing how hard, how much ingenuity it takes to be poor. But the stories of survival are really fantastic stories. Stories of happiness or stories of misery. So what I want us to do today is to tell some story which is a rite of passage when we get to writing. We'll do a 12-minute rite pretty soon when I'm done with my little stuff. And I named some rites of passage there: birth, death, graduation, learning to drive or to drink or whatever learning, your first boyfriend, a trip. Often trips across water are symbolic in literature, but a trip anywhere is often important in a life. It's a transition of some kind, facing a fear. I put parentheses around death because tomorrow I'm going to focus entirely on, my kickoff words are going to be about story about death, because I think it's so major in our life and we have so much to learn from each other. But if you want to write a death story today, you certainly may. I'm going to read you some examples. First, I'm going to read you a couple of different voices in a story. The first one is first person, and I think that's the easiest way to tell the story of your life. But sometimes, if a story is too painful, you don't want to be in the first person. You want to tell it as though it's happening to someone else, in the third person, say. But here's Willa Cather starting out a Wagner matinee, which is an absolutely lovely story. I recommend it to you if you haven't read it. I received one morning a letter written in pale ink on glassy blue-lined notepaper and bearing the postmark of a little Nebraska village. This communication, worn and rubbed, looked as if it had been carried for some days in a coat pocket that was none too clean, and it was from my Uncle Howard. Now, what you know from this already is that this letter is probably late because it's been carried around in somebody's pocket. It was written on pale ink, on glassy blue-lined notepaper. That tells you something about the writer, and it bears a postmark of a little Nebraska village. Also, when you receive, in a story, when you receive a communication, when you receive a letter, you know that that's going to be important. That's going to change something or make a difference. Here's a story that is in the third person, Catherine Ann Porter's story called Rope. On the third day after they moved to the country, he came walking back from the village carrying a basket of groceries and 24-yard coil of rope. She came out to meet him, wiping her hands on her green smock. So what do we know from that? On the third day after they moved to the country, he came walking back from the village. Now, why was he walking? Did he start out in a car and have to change to walking? Or did they have to walk always? Did that mean something about their economic status? Or where they were, that there were no roads? Carrying a basket of groceries and a 24-yard coil of rope. And since the title of the story is Rope, we know this rope is going to figure largely in the story. 24 yards, why? Why was he carrying this coil of rope? But anyhow, it's in the third person. It's an omniscient person, actually. It's someone who knows everything that's going on. And he's in the head of everybody, or she is, Catherine Ann Porter is, and she's telling about these people. So if you want to get some distance on your story, especially if you're telling a painful story, you can consider going into the third person. I'm going to read a few kickoff pieces here. And what I gave you yesterday is an example of how these kickoff pieces work. I'm going to repeat today. A kickoff piece that I'm not going to use is, when I was growing up, all my Sundays were just alike. What you would do with that line could be, when I was growing up, none of our Sundays are just alike. Or you could say, when I was growing up, all of our Sundays were just alike and I hated every one of them. Or when I was growing up, all our Sundays were just alike except one, and that's the story you're going to tell. In other words, don't take it literally. Take what stimulates your imagination and go with that. So I'm going to read you a few of those, and I'll point out to you places in them that I think might be helpful opening lines. For me, the blank page is terrifying. So I've taken opening line out of something like this, and then I'm off and running. So I'm giving you opening lines and a way of approaching a story. The first one is by Di Brandt. It's got a great opening line. Now, I may have written it up there. No, I don't think I did. Let me tell you, dear reader, about the time... Let me tell you, dear reader, about the time. We've already got an opening line there. Now listen to her time. Let me tell you, dear reader, about the time my body was a ship and I sailed the seas of downtown Toronto in it, sails billowing, full of wind, spirit breath, baby's breath. And the young men on Bloor averted their eyes, and the Portuguese construction workers on Huron Street whistled through their teeth and grunted, "Ah, now there's a mama." And the young women in the park, coming suddenly into view with their strollers on the green grass, and I sailing down the sidewalks past them, glorious in my pride. "Ah, dear reader," she repeats, "let me tell you how I loved my body then, my huge floating belly, my nipples big, dark, swollen with milk, leaking desire, golden liquid, all over the bed and the pillow and the floor, and how I loved my lover then, who filled me with such bounty, erotic trembling, oceanic bliss, smacking, sucking, stroking my sunlit prow, big with child. It was then, dear reader, my brain sank into my womb, dark-lipped, bearded, dripping with child, with child, with child. Such a grand billowing on the high seas, such unfurling, such a mighty flowering among the busy streets, expecting, pregnant." I partly chose it. I think Di Brandt is just wonderful, but I partly chose it because it is so, it's sinning boldly. I mean, she's so glorious in her enormous pregnancy. But it starts out with this nice line, "Let me tell you, dear reader, about the time my body was a ship." So you could use that line in some other way. Not all of us felt that way about being pregnant either. So. Here is another one. This one is called Wishes for Martha Stewart. You all know who Martha Stewart is. "What I wish for Martha Stewart is guilt. Guilt for the underwear hanging from dresser drawers and last night's spaghetti stuck on the dishes, stacked in the sink, and ragged towels and washcloths with strings hanging off their edges like the fringe of a can-can dancer, and green splotches on bread and cheese tinged in blue, and potatoes with extended tentacles like an octopus in the broom cupboard, and brown lines decorating the inside of my off-white tub, holding memories of hairs gone by, and rolling balls of fluff under bed stuck to shiny dead black flies now lying on their backs. Feet in the air, and the footprints of spiders traced into the corners of the ceilings and decorating my chandeliers of different sized light bulbs, some bright, some dim, some just plain off." And it goes on and on like this, just sort of reveling in how, and finally it ends up it
garbage cans piled high and faded sheets with unmatched pillowcases over flattened pillows and overflowing septic tanks and broken water pumps and a huge yard of long grass decorated with dandelions and mice and water in the basement but not in the taps and unexpected house guests coming. Yes, what I wish for Martha Stewart is a real woman's life. So, yeah, it's good, and it's funny, and she has no punctuation in the whole thing. Oh. It's a whole, it's this long, and it has not one comma or period. So that's another way of doing it, you know, and that effect of no punctuation is sort of hysteria and panic and, you know, the sense of, but the line, the opening line is a good one, what I wish for, and you could wish it for anyone. It wouldn't have to be Martha Stewart. It could be Billy Graham. It could be your grandmother. It could be your child. What I wish for my child is, you know, that my child should have to suffer as much as I've suffered with you. You could say something tender and lovely to your child. But it's another way of getting into... This one is one of my favorites. It is two sides about a house. And the two sides are, from this house I take. And it can be your childhood house, you know, from this house I take the memory of, you know, I mean, we would all start to cry right away when we started telling these memories. From this house I take. And you just make a list. You don't write beautiful prose, you just list them. And what this person did with that is, in this house I will leave. Which is the other side of that same thing. The sting on my legs from the razor strap that hangs behind the wood stove. The yellow wallpaper flowers in the detention corner by the back door. The whispery night shadows of the bushes along the path to the outhouse. The plunge of the red-tipped enema tube rammed into my rectum, the surge of hot cramps, the icy smoothness of the oilcloth mat, the giggle my sister makes of my silent screams, the piles of dirty Sunday plates to be washed by hand after her sisters left, the poached egg on toast every night for supper. So it's a chance to leave behind some stuff. Some pain, some what you need to leave behind. What will you leave behind from this house? And do you want to write the other half of it, from this house I will take? So it can be two-sided, or it can be, I had a friend once who took one thing from his childhood house, which was a little carved lion that someone had given him, an aunt that cared a little for him but rarely saw him. He said, I took nothing else, nothing. And he would go on at length about how he took nothing. So the sting on my legs from the razor strap that hangs behind the wood stove, I mean, it's a wonderful sentence because it's precise and clear and vivid, and but it's also discharging. It's what you needed to leave behind. So that's another wonderful way to start. This is going to be hard for you to pick, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Sister, I have one other that I wanted to read for you. Yeah, this one is a very, this is another hard one. It's called The Takers, Sharon Olds. Hitler entered Paris the way my sister entered my room at night. Hitler entered Paris the way my sister entered my room at night. You know this isn't going to be good. Sat astride me, squeezed me with her knees, held her thumbnails to the skin of my wrists, and peed on me, knowing mother would never believe my story. It was very silent, her dim face above me gleaming in the shadows. The dark gold smell of her urine spread through the room, its heat boiling on my legs, my small pelvis wet. When the hissing stopped, when the hole had been scorched in my body, I lay, crisp and charred with shame, and felt her skin glitter in the air, her dark gold pleasure unfold. As he stood over, now we've switched back suddenly to Hitler, as he stood over Napoleon's tomb and murmured, "This is the finest moment of my life." What a vivid, I mean, how much we know about that sister from that Hitler framework on either end of it. So, you have this invitation. Would anyone like to hear anything over a line? Or okay, let's write for 12 minutes, and then I'll pull us back together for some reading. All right, let's pull back together again. We will now enter into a period of reading for those who would like to share with us something that they have read. I have today written 5 guidelines for reading. 5 rules. I'm really strict at this point, so listen up. One is, when you are listening to someone read, if you hear a line or a word or a phrase that you like, write it down on your own page so that you can remember it. And the second thing is, after the person has read, I will invite comments, and I will allow only 2 kinds of comments. One kind will be, "I liked it when you said," and then you'll look down at your page and read those words. So that you can, it's so wonderful for a writer to hear their words back. And so if you would reflect back to them their words, a phrase, a sentence, a word, it means so much to hear that. If you have, you will have the experience tonight, some of you, and you'll see what I mean. So, "I liked it when you said," and then read their words off your page. Or the other kind of comment you can make is, "I want to know more about." So, "I want to know more about," or "I liked it when you said," are the 2 kinds of comments that we will make. The third thing is, when you are reading, I don't want you to explain your story to us or frame it up for us or make excuses for it. What we're honoring here tonight is the words on the page. So what I want to hear out of your mouth is the words on the page. So if you raise your hand to read, I want you to pick up your piece of paper and read. The fourth one is, sometimes when we write our life stories, we feel tears. And when we read them out loud, we feel tears. We express tears. Tears are fine. We don't need to fuss about them. I said yesterday, and I still believe it, everyone should cry every day. So don't feel that if someone next to you is crying, you need to get up and fuss. I think you should honor their tears with respect and silence. I have some tissue here if we should need it. And the fifth one is, absolutely no comments in response to someone's writing of telling your own story. No responding to story with story. What we're honoring here tonight is the written word on the page. We are not telling stories about our lives to each other. So when someone reads something, it's going to trigger something in your head, and you're going to want to tell a story, but you have to get them on the arc afterwards. So with those 5 rules in mind, now that you know how strict I am, who would like to begin? Wanda.
Okay. Here goes. I started off with, "Since that day, nothing has been the same. A young girl went to school one day at the age of 7 and came home only to find her mother had been taken to the hospital to die. Since that day, nothing has been the same. She tried so hard to make it without her mother. She told herself that she would have to mother herself. Since that day, nothing has been the same. She grew up without a mother, never knowing how to be a mother, having children. Since that day, nothing has been the same. She did a lot of things that She did a lot of things in her life that made her ashamed. Since that day, nothing has been the same. Now she's all grown up, and at the age of 40, she's still grieving the death of her mother. She is a motherless daughter, and nothing will ever be the same.
May we applaud?
Well, why don't you who has a response for Wanda? Who would like to say something?
I like the use of repetition.
Yeah.
Kept repeating since that day, and that's such a powerful element of the story. I really like that.
I did too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who else has a comment? Some feedback for Wanda?
Mm-hmm. The fact that she made it so real.
You're breaking all my rules. But it's true. She did.
What are the two phrases now that we can use?
I liked it when you said, and I want to know more about.
I want to know more about what went the things that she did wrong. Which is good. It's a good lead in, and it makes you want to know more about, so you're going to keep reading. Because I'm assuming you'd go into that.
Uh-huh. Right. Tantalizing. Yes, Chris.
Wanda, I think the use of that phrase, since that day nothing has been the same, and continuing that through all the years of your life, was so important because it makes the reader understand that the loss of your mother wasn't just one of many events in your life, but that it completely affected everything in your life, and still does.
Katrina.
I like the way you said she's all grown up.
Yeah, good. Thanks. Uh-huh. One more.
I want to know more about your mother.
Interesting. Thank you. Thank you. I think that, well, okay, one last time.
I actually like the phrase motherless daughter, just to think about
mother's daughter versus motherless daughter or fatherless daughter. What are the different sorts of daughters that are
being taught? Great, thank you. Who would like to read next? Okay.
I didn't use any of those, but I can still feel the gut-wrenching excitement those 4 a.m. wake-up calls would deliver. Jan's clear, crisp voice piercing the cold farm dawn. Hippie, time to get up. The surge of adrenaline bulleting me out of bed. I'm up, I'm up! As I hopped around, with one leg already driven into my clean jodhpurs. The pristine, starched shirt set out so carefully the night before. My grandfather's gold tie, my only physical memory of him, and my shiny, over-polished black boots. This is how those glorious show days would begin. Jan would have been up long before arousing me, packing the day's picnic and ensuring there was some sort of hot breakfast to offer me. I would bolt through the kitchen, too nervous to eat, and run to the stables, creeping the last few steps in the hope of catching my chestnut beauty still sleeping.
What's your name?
Philippa.
Philippa.
Oh, Pippa is short, and that was a nickname.
So, who has comments for Philippa? Okay, good. Katrina?
I like the phrase, gut-wrenching.
Excellent. Good comment, Katrina.
I love the wording and the image of bulleting me out of bed.
Yeah, good.
I like the chestnut beauty.
Great. Other?
Mm-hmm. I like the letters, how like it's cold, crisp, and short set, black boots, creepy chestnut. Mm-hmm. The rhythm and the variation.
I liked how it was so descriptive, and you could almost see like someone getting up and moving to it.
Pristine starched shirt. Mm-hmm. And only physical memory of him. jumped out at me too. Thank you, Philippa.
I was just going to say, I want to know now what happened. How did that day go? And I want to know the rest of the story.
So you're pulled in. Great. Who's our next reader? Okay.
I didn't use any of those lines up there either.
Why don't you tell us your name?
Donna.
Donna.
As the train that is my life pulled out of the sight, up into the mountains of the world around me, to the next crew change point, I, the engineer, have finally uncoupled one of the cars of my heavy train load consisting of my hang-ups. This car is carrying a load of shame, guilt, and humiliation. From the sexual abuse of my body when I was 8 years old. By finally uncoupling this one car, my train is made lighter, and I now find it going easier up the steep mountain grade that is my life. However, my train is still pulling a heavy load that is still making it difficult for me to get up the mountain pass that stands in the way of my attempts to remember that I, too, am a child of God. It is a difficult railroad to travel without help or locomotives that couple onto my train, giving me extra power to make it up the pass. As much as I would like to do it without helpers, I can't do it alone. God, please be my helper.
I like the analogy you use for training and uncoupling me. That's very interesting. In this deep grave of my life, that is my life.
Clear language. Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. Wanda.
I like when you say, God, please be my helper. Because that gave me a sense of that everything is going to be okay.
Thank you. Donna, thank you. Are there other comments for Donna? Or
a load of shame, guilt, and abuse.
Yeah, that was very powerful. If we had more time, the next step would be for me to ask each of you readers, how did it feel to read it? And then I would ask you to write down the answer to that. So maybe you should do that. How did it feel to read it? I think it would be important for you to do that. Just take a moment. Thank you, Donna. Who would like to read next? We have a lot of volunteers here. You were first, I think. And then you and you. So let's start with you. Or you volunteered a while ago.
Oh, I was just going to ask people to read a little louder.
Oh, okay. I think reading louder is important. It's hard. So Katrina, that makes you next. Can you stand up? It's really hard to hear.
My first boyfriend. I was 10 years old, and so was he. One day he came up to my side looking kind of, I don't know. Anyway, he sort of elbowed my elbow and shrugged his shoulders. So I shrugged my shoulders too, and at the same time made my mouth smirk as my eyes rolled around my head. After that little episode of shoulder shrugging and facial gestures, he walked me home from school every day. MacArthur was truly my first boyfriend. He is also my first husband. We married at 21. Strangely though, separated at 21 and a half.
Okay, any comments for Katrina?
Oh, that was great. I especially liked when you started right off saying, he came up and I don't know, you know, it's like just saying I don't know and shrugging the shoulders. Something I think we could all relate to at being that age, like you have no idea what's going on, but you know something's going on. That was great.
Just the whole element of like being a child and being innocent, and I love elbow to my elbow. It's fun to say even. I can say it all night. But it was just really cute, and it just made me like picture you when you were younger and not really know you. I just could see you there, you know, and just it was a really cute image.
Nice humor.
Mm-hmm. I never heard anyone be able to describe that young love as well as she did. You know, how they kind of battle up to, you know, she did it well.
Yeah.
I like the way you read that. Not only did I have a sense of, when you're supposed to do that, I like the way you read that, that is a lot for me. And I was particularly caught by my first boyfriend and my first husband, which was a surprise. Mm-hmm. And made me want to know more, and it ended there. And,
yeah, good, thanks. Okay, we have another reader volunteered back here. Is it you?
I think there's a couple of us here, so.
Okay. Why don't you start?
Okay.
What's your name?
Mary Lou.
Mary Lou, will you stand up? Thank you.
From this house, I will take the couch, the $20 couch from Goodwill, with a brick for the back leg, which is long enough to sleep a 6-foot stepbrother. The tally of gray moths killed day by day at a tight 10 or 15 dip, hairy little bodies. The small fan hissing softly, fully sufficient when coupled with a north wind about 9 p.m. A Hoover industrial vac and needle-nose pliers needed to pry it apart and loosen its dusty interior. A white pail, perfect for scrubbing, I got from my sister before she moved to that island to marry that crazy tall sailor man. My gardening gloves, a bit of homegrown compost, dirt-stained knee pads, and a few good pots. The frying pan, cast iron, and heavily seasoned. I spent a little time in the cupboard, so busy was it with French toast, hash browns, and stir-fry. The big beach dresser, low and wide, to fit the attic room. Disassembled to make it down the 21-inch staircase and a buoy.
All right, thank you. Who have comments for Mary Lou?
I like the beginning about the couch, and I can just see this old, beat-up looking couch. Yeah, this old beat-up Goodwill couch for $20. You just see the sack in the middle.
The brick for the back leg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, got that brick.
I like the husband life. The divorced husband. But, well, not divorced, the sister's husband.
Right. Other comments? Wanda?
I like the dirt-stained knee pads. There is a lot of work being done on the knee pads.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that too.
Uh-huh. And I like the, I forget what it was, that spent so little time in the cupboard because it was always
Yeah.
I couldn't help but wonder why you were leaving. Why you were leaving?
So you want to know more about why?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
But that's what you were asking.
Yeah.
Because she pulled you into the picture, and you were then curious once you were there.
Right.
Uh-huh. I liked how she described the fan being totally sufficient with the wind from the north.
Right. Yeah. All those vivid phrases.
I wanted to know where she was moving. Or at what age she was.
So you wanted to know more about where she was going at what age. So you got people hooked here. They want to know. You got to keep writing.
I want to know more about that crazy sailor man.
Katrina's always got the eye for love. Great. Thank you. I feel so bad about not having a chance to listen to very many people read. We could divide up into pairs or quads, and you could read to a little quad. Each of you could read then. Would you like to do that?
Yeah.
Okay, why don't we just do that? Why don't you just gather into fours and read to each other? Is that what you'd like?
Yeah.